thank you for being with us this morning and really throughout the weekend. Kudos to Lenore Ely and her team, to Ingrid Gregg and the board, for this meeting's inspiring theme, Restoring America's Prosperity. In taking up this topic, we've hoped to shed light on important issues of political economy that seem widely misunderstood in the public square today. An unprecedented rise in personal public debt, our national government routinely ignores constitutional prerogatives mandating sound fiscal practices, and Americans seem generally unwilling or unable to address many of the economic, political, and social challenges that have already created enormous problems in other countries. I'm Terry Anker, and I'll moderate this panel this morning. Today's theme is, can America still be a land of opportunity, entrepreneurship, and prosperity? I'm not sure that it isn't any longer, but the rhetoric of income inequality and from this progressive era to the Occupy movement to Piketty, all of these hold an important sway in the American rhetoric. Today, we hope to consider what can be done to better frame this rhetoric surrounding this concept of income equality or inequality, to help resume and restore some of the energy and optimism that have long characterized the American system of free enterprise, and I would dare to say all of us in this room. So, with me today are our panelists, John Hood. Most of you know John, the president of the Pope Foundation and former president, still chairman of the John Locke Foundation. He has written a syndicated column on politics since 1986. You've held up pretty well to be that old. He's a frequent guest on talk radio and television political talk shows, and is the author of several books. Frank Buckley, to my far left, is a foundation professor at George Mason University School of Law. So there are those of us who graduate from law school and go on to other things. Tell your students. It is a possibility. After being a visiting Olin Fellow at the University of Chicago Law School, he's taught at McGill in Montreal, the Sorbonne in Paris, and Sciences Po, also in Paris, or Po, rather. He's practiced law for 3 years in Toronto and written many books as well. He's a senior editor of the American Spectator and has written formally for virtually everyone else, it looked like from your CV. He's a citizen of Canada, but also became an American citizen on Tax Day, April 15, 2014. I can only begin to imagine what motivated that to happen. Unfortunately, many of you saw that we're down one presenter from today because he was not able to join us, but I'm sure we'll be back for future conferences. This distinction between a mob and a populist revolution, in my mind, is a narrow one. Contemporary French journalist and politician Jean-Francis Revel illustrates the point beautifully. He says, "A human group transforms itself into a crowd when it suddenly responds to a suggestion rather than to reasoning, to an image rather than to an idea, to an affiliation rather than to proof, to the repetition of a phrase rather than to arguments, to prestige rather than to competence." I thought that was especially important given our current state of affairs. Rich, wealthy, income disparity, income divide. These are the words that are meant to sting. Does our leadership hope, intend to foment classism? If so, is it warranted and rightly defined? Who are these rich people? The current U.S. government has chosen a combined annual household income of $250,000 to be the rhetoric, or the metric, rather. They point to a very real gap from the median, showing that those higher wage earners eclipse their fellow Americans by almost six times. Assuming that the math is correct, which I do not, what is the context of this contrast? A Gallup poll in 2013 of median incomes globally places the United States at sixth highest with just over $43,000, and Burundi the lowest with $673 U.S. In other words, the median American family expects 60 times the income of that in the comparison country. Moreover, this income number excludes the enormous infrastructure, safety net, education, and other advantages found in the U.S. The gap between us and there is over 11 times. Mark Twain said, "Few things are more irritating than when someone who is wrong is also very effective in making their point." Even with our own misguided Robin Hoods attempting to equalize inequality, are we spending too much time looking at those whom we believe have more and not enough time thinking about how we ourselves might get there? Raised on a small family farm in the middle of nowhere, literally unincorporated Indiana, in the 1970s, I watched as changing business conditions, bad economic policy, and changing social orders were dissolving the agricultural fabric. Some 50 years earlier, the vast majority of Americans claimed to be farmers. Now the number is under 4% and still dropping. Countless cousins and schoolmates that, trapped by fear or ignorance, allowed the world to change around them. About 15% of my graduating class went on to higher education. Many others, un- or underemployed, took to drugs and alcohol and crime, unfortunately, to fill the void. In a generation, many of us were abruptly split into camps. While few, if any, had parents that had attended college, most of those parents lived very fulfilled lives. Many from my generation found jail instead of jobs. Others found frustration instead of fulfillment. Blame the media, blame education, blame capitalists, blame whoever you like, but we found ourselves at a point when leaders and liberty seemed to operate in separate silos, safely insulated one from the other. I spent the first decade of my life trying to survive business, trying to achieve the American dream, whatever that means, trying to stay married, and trying to raise a family. So far, all those things have worked out okay. My wife's not here, so it worries me. I got to be careful about talking. Joe might repeat it to her if he gets the chance. I imagined myself to be active, but most of my thinking was truly instinctive. Since I walked across the stage graduating from law school, I mistakenly believed that I was done. I was educated. I had the hat, mortarboard, I had the sheepskin. I was complete. But as the businesses grew, commensurate with my tax burden, I might say, I found myself routinely in a defensive posture. One morning, my then 6-year-old son and I were watching the local news, as was our custom. The overtly perky newscaster made some reference to an expensive home just built by the owner of a professional athletics team. Innocently, my son turned to me and proclaimed that he did not want to be rich. I was too stunned by the statement to point out that in terms of almost the entire planet, he already is rich. So I simply asked him why. He responded that it was because rich people are bad. Okay, now I'm very distressed. Why do you think that way, son? Because my teacher told me so. Words failed me. At that moment, it was painfully clear that I needed to know more than how to fill out a local IRS form or an NCAA tourney bracket to be a good citizen. I needed to be able to talk about freedom and responsibility, and while honest success is good for all. Can America still be a land of opportunity, entrepreneurship, and prosperity? Are we doomed to be either victims of the economy or the villains who control it? The Philadelphia Society, and this weekend specifically, reminds us that we know the path to find success, and it runs directly through America. Certainly, the challenges are many, and the trail overgrows very quickly. But that 16-year-old boy that you met earlier is now 15 and starting to think about his first car. Why is he working to save money while his buddies are getting a free, I suppose, Bernie Sanders vehicle? And what is FICA, and why is she taking money from my paycheck? There is nothing like trying to earn a living to teach us a free and ordered life. Thank you. John, maybe you can help us figure it out.